Morning.
Today's daf in Bamitzia Samach Vav. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is long as Zechanish Maslib Gabriel Bashmuel. We're starting today in the Mishnah on Samach Hamid Beis. Almost a week through the first parak of, I'm sorry, through the fifth parak of Vezu Neshech. So our discussion will continue to be for the next week. Topic of Ribbis, you're not allowed to lend with interest. We've covered the basics regarding what's Ribbis Daraisa versus what is Ribbis Darabanan. And now the Mishnah is going to be discussing some of the more subtler points regarding Ribbis. So we start with two cases in the Mishnah. First case is going to be Aser, second case is going to be Mutter. And let us observe the difference. The first case of the Mishnah goes as follows: Machalos Asada, Manasa Lo Mixas Damim. So the sale the sale of a field is a sale, and the buyer puts down a down payment. Va'amrlo Emasai Shitir Sahava Maos V'Tol Shocha. And the seller says to the buyer, "Look, I'm very happy about the down payment. I love it, but the sale's not going to be finalized until you send me the balance. And until you send me the balance." The sale is not going to be finalized. So the Mishnah says, Aser, under these circumstances, it's going to be prohibited. What is going to be prohibited? To actually make such an arrangement is going to be prohibited. Now, the obvious question is why? What's wrong with that? Meaning, I can understand from the perspective of the seller, he said he does not want to part with the field until he gets all of his money, until he gets paid. Yes, it's true. We spoke not that long ago about the idea that a down payment does certainly satisfy the requirement of a kinyan, and we know that as far as Hilchos Kinyanim are concerned, a down payment is what you need to put down. You don't need to put down the whole thing. But over here, there's a very clear stipulation between seller and buyer. Seller simply saying to the buyer, "I'm not relinquishing my ownership of the field until I get the entire money." And he has the right to do that. He has every right to do that. So what's wrong with this such an arrangement? So let's take a look at Rashi, where Rashi explains the problem. Take a look at the Rashi of Aser. Rashi writes, "Also lasos kain v'davka da'amar le'lechi ma'ases muter moser hamaos kana me'achshav." So Rashi says there's an important detail which we're going to see in the Gemara together, but Rashi tells us now, and that is that what the seller says to the buyer is that when you hand me the balance of the money that you owe me, so the sale will be a complete sale, will be finalized sale, retroactive to the time that you put down the down payment. Now Rashi goes on to say, "Lefichach aser lasos kain," and as a result of that, it now has become prohibited. Why? She'im yochel mocher peiros besokach. Because consider, we're going to consider both possibilities. Let's say that during this interim period, where the sale may or may not be good, and it really will only be contingent on whether or not the buyer does give the balance at the end. During this interim period, let's say the mocher is the one who eats the fruit of the field. So that means now when the buyer hands the balance of the money, so that means that the sale was complete and finalized retroactive to the time of the original sale. And so therefore, what just happened from the perspective of the mocher? So basically what happened was is that I let him hold my money, because it was the mocher's money. I let him hold my money, and over this interim period, I also ate the fruit of the field. So I got an additional benefit over the fact that he also was holding on to my money. So it's a form of ribbis. Okay, again, right, exactly. Where in the ribbis spectrum are we? Are we, is this ribbis daraisa? Probably not. Ribbis darabanan? Probably yes. But it's ribbis. In other words, but you're getting an extra benefit while somebody's holding onto your money. Now, v'im yochel lokech peiros me'achshav. So the and now let's go the other direction. Let's say the lokech now was going to be eating the fruit during this interim period. Shemalo yavi moser hamaos. So what may end up happening is that the buyer does not complete the sale, and if the buyer does not complete the sale, so v'yachzer lo mashekibel. So then, of course, the seller is going to go to the buyer and say, "Look, I'm really sorry, you can't complete the sale. Here's your down payment that you let me hold on to, and I'm giving it back to you." So now, effectively, what just happened? so that the seller was holding on to the money of the buyer. Now we can call that a loan because that's really what it was. And over that interim period, the buyer now was eating the fruit of the field. So once again, somebody was holding on to his money and he got an additional benefit. So v'nimtza, Rashi writes exactly this point. V'nimtza shalo aisa sada kenuya lo, dalechi maisis kani me'achshav amar lo, v'halo aisi. He didn't bring the balance of the money. Therefore, his down payment, his deposit is viewed as a loan. And during this interim period, he got to eat fruit in addition now to getting his money recouped. Okay, so, one way or another, somebody's going to be violating ribis. Now, it's a 50-50, depending on whether or not he pays up or he doesn't pay up. But there's a chance. This should strike you as something that we discussed a day ago, and we're going to be discussing it again over the course of today's daf. And really, this is contingent interest, meaning we don't know if it's going to be interest. We'll only know at the conclusion of the transaction. But perhaps I may be violating the Isser of Ribis, and this is what we refer to a while back as Ribis Mitzad Echad. It's contingent Ribis. And remember, Rav Yehuda was of the opinion that it's okay. He was lenient when it comes to contingent ribis. So obviously, the conclusion I'm drawing is the one that the Gemara will draw later on. So I'm not saying anything novel right now, just foreshadowing what's coming up ahead. So obviously, our Mishnah is not following the opinion of Rav Yehuda because it's only contingent interest. Continuing now in the Mishnah. Okay, so that takes care of case number one. So case number one is Aser because of the contingent interest that we just described. Case number two, Hival al Sadeu. So let's say we're talking about a loan. So right now the transaction over here starts off as a loan, with a field being used as a security against the loan. V'amrlo im iata nosin li mikan v'ashal shanim. And the lender says to the borrower, look, I'm giving you a 3-year term on the loan, and if you pay me within the 3 years, that's great. Okay, that's the kind of relationship that I would love. But if you don't pay me within 3 years, harehi shali, then I'm just simply going to collect on the land. So he simply just gives him a term in terms of when the loan is going to be due. And if you don't satisfy the loan, so then I'm just going to simply possess the land. I'll foreclose on the property. So far, so good. Here comes the interesting part. The property will belong to him. And Baisus ben Zunin did this based on the advice on the council given to him by the Chachamim. Okay. Excuse me. The Mishnah seems to be describing nothing more than just a simple foreclosure on a property. At this point in time right now, we don't really know what exactly, excuse me, we don't really know what exactly is the characteristic of the Mishnah that makes it so unique and so interesting. Please stay tuned. That's going to be coming up later on. During this interim period, who's going to eat the fruit? Now, the Gemara's discussion over here is a little bit interesting because in the first case in our Mishnah, we learned that you can't do that because nobody's allowed to eat the fruit. Okay, so this point will be clarified in just a moment. So who can eat the fruit during this interim period? Ravuna Amar Mocha Chaperos. So Ravuna's of the opinion that the seller can eat the fruit, and Ravanan Amar Mishashon Saperos, and Ravanan says no. You put the fruit in escrow. Nobody eats the fruit. Not the buyer. Not the seller. Nobody eats the fruit. It's v'lo pligi. And now we get clarification. What exactly is going on over here? Gemara says, really, I'll tell you what. No debate is happening. It's not a machlokus. Hadam lechi maisis kani. So the Gemara says very simply, if the seller says to the buyer, look, you give me a down payment, that's great, I'm happy, but the sale will not be finalized until you give me the balance. And until that point in time, the seller still is the owner of the property. Perfect. So until the balance is given, the sale is not going to be completed, and the seller is still now owning the property. So of course, the seller can eat the fruit from the field. It's his field. And even when the balance is due, when the balance is presented, nothing was violated. No interest was violated. The field was his up to and including the time that the balance was given. So that would have been fine. Meanwhile, in the case where we're going to put the fruit in escrow, that's talking about a scenario in which when the balance is paid, the sale will be good retroactive to the time of the down of the deposit. Retroactive to the time of the down payment. As we learned back in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to create such a structured arrangement because of the possibility that somebody's going to be violating ribbis. So over here now, what the Gemara is introducing to us is that if we agree that all the fruit in the field are going to be put in escrow, now I know it's fruit, I know it's perishables, so it may not be super practical, but if we, or maybe I'm just thinking now, I'm just thinking on the fly, or maybe the fruit will just simply be converted into money. In any event, if you put the fruit in escrow and then wait to find out whether or not the sale will be finalized or not, and then based on that, we'll then hand the fruit over to the rightful owner during the interim period. So under those circumstances, so then yes, you can construct such a arrangement of a down payment and the balance paid later and the sale retroactive to the time of the down payment as long as nobody eats the fruit. Today, Rav Safra beribus de bei Rabbi Chiya. Rav Safra had brisas of Rabbi Chiya specific to the topic of ribbis. Not the first time in the parak that we have learned brisas from Rabbi Chiya specific to ribbis. I think this is number two. Pamim shashneim mutarim, pamim shashneim asurim, pamim shamochim motor v'lokeach aser, upamim shalokeach motor mocha aser. The brisa teaches us that it's such an arrangement of a down payment now, a balance paid later, so there could be four different permutations. One, they both can eat the fruit. Two, neither can eat the fruit. Three, the seller can eat the fruit but not the buyer. And four, the buyer can eat the fruit and not the seller. And now all we need to do is just fill in the blank. Meaning, what would be a scenario in which we could have all four situations? Under Rava Basrei, so Rava, after hearing the brisa, says, "Okay, I'm going to say a very simple pshat. One, pamim shishneim mutarim da'amar lekani kishir zizeich. Okay, so in scenario number one, where both the buyer and the seller can eat the fruit, it's very simple. The seller says to the buyer, "You're giving me a down payment. I'll tell you what, I'll sell you the field right now, a portion of it, prorated, commensurate to the amount of the down payment you're giving me." So let's say a down payment of 50% is given, and the seller says to the buyer, "Fine, I'll give you 50% of the field, now we're good. Now they both can eat the fruit, because they are now both owners, have shares in the property." That's one. Two, pamim shishneim asurim. There's going to be a point in time where they both cannot eat the fruit between the down payment and the satisfaction of the balance. And that is damalei lechi maisis kani miachshav. What we've been discussing both in the Mishnah and in the Gemara, right? Most of our morning so far has been dedicated to the topic of a retroactive sale. Meaning the down payment is given. Seller says to the buyer, "Yes, but I'm not selling it to you. The sale will not be finalized until you give me the balance. And when you give me the balance, it's going to be good retroactive to the time of the down payment." And now the fruit are in limbo because we don't know who it's going to belong to until either the balance is paid or not paid. Under those circumstances, neither of them can eat it, like we learned in the Mishnah. And if you subscribe to the view of Rav Anan, so then you just simply put it in escrow and let the fruit stay in escrow until it is determined who in fact is a buyer. Three, pamim mochem mutav lokeach chaser. We're going to have a scenario in which the mocher, the seller, is allowed to eat the fruit, but not the buyer. When would that be? Damalei lechi maisis kani. Very simple, says Rava. That's the next one. I numbered mine, so I keep it clean. So pame mocher motor v'lokeach aser. So the seller is motor and lokeach is aser. And that is the amr lei lechi maisis kani. So he says, when you give me the down payment, then and only then the sale is going to be a completed sale. And so that means during this interim period, there's only one owner, and that's going to be the mocher. And therefore, the mocher can eat the fruit in the field, and obviously not the lokech; it's not his until he gives the balance. And finally, number four, pamim shalokech muter mocher aser time le kini me'achshav v'zuzel lahavi avach kabech. And in case number four, that's the easiest to explain. That's basically how we all purchase our properties. And that is, most of us, I should say. And that is, we put down a down payment. The sale has been finalized. What about the balance? The balance is a loan. And the buyer says to the seller, "Look, the entire property belongs to you. And as far as the balance is concerned, so you owe me that money. So under those circumstances, now the entire property belongs immediately to the buyer, and the buyer now can eat the fruit on the field. Okay, good. So we have a brice of Rav Safra, and Rava very smoothly explains each one of these scenarios where you can have both mutter, both aser, mocher mutter, and the lokech being mutter to eat the fruit on the field. We continue. Mantan shnei masurim. Amar Rav Huna b'Rav Yishu d'lok Reb Yehuda. Gemara now makes the point that I already made back in the Mishnah, but now the Gemara says it, which is the only reason why I knew it. Well, not the only reason, but why I knew it, and that is that our Mishnah is not going like Reb Yehuda. The Reb Yehuda hamar tzadech habribis mutter. Reb Yehuda says that contingent interest is fine. We have in our Mishnah a structured deal in which, if the down payment is paid, so then the property retroactively goes to the buyer. If the down payment is not paid, so then the property remains by the seller. We don't know how it's going to end up. And during this interim period, sorry, I said down payment, I meant balance. Correction. If the balance is paid, so then the sales retroactively goes to the buyer. If the balance is not paid, so then the seller remains the owner of the property. And we don't know how it's going to end up. And during this interim period between the down payment and the balance, we don't know. And as we explained already in the Mishnah, as we went through Rashi, so in one of those scenarios, somebody's going to be violating interest. But we don't know. Rav Yehuda says, has already said, and says it again, and we're going to say it one more time today. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that this is contingent interest, and because it's contingent interest, he doesn't feel that that's an issue. Not min haTorah, not min haRabbanan. And so, presumably. And so our Mishnah does not subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda. Mashkin li bias, mashkin li sadeh. Okay. Sorry. Mashkin lo bias, mashkin lo sadeh. Okay, so I want to borrow money, and I present my property, my house or my field, as a simple security against the loan. V'amr lo l'cheshetir tzolamochram lo timkarim elali. And the lender says to the borrower, okay, but let me do the following. I want exclusive rights to purchase your property. I want to be the only buyer of your property. Now, right now, I don't own the property. Now, yes, it's pledged to me for a loan, but that doesn't make me the owner. It just simply means that now I have a mortgage on the property. But I'm not the owner of the property. And not only does the lender say to the borrower that I want exclusivity to the right to buy your property, but bedamim halalo, I would like now to buy it with the debt. Meaning, you owe me money, and so I'd like to buy it with the money that you owe me. And, as it will become extraordinarily clear in just a moment to all of us, the money does not actually equal the value of the property. And so basically, he knows he's got the borrower in a little bit of a bind. The borrower obviously is desperate for money, and he now using his property security, and the lender now basically taking advantage of the situation by saying that I'm going to buy the property but at a reduced price. So to this, also the Brisa says that such an arrangement is going to be prohibited. You cannot do that.
It's a purchase, rather. Isn't it a purchase?
Huh?
Isn't it a purchase? It's different than a mortgage.
Oh, no. So wait one second. Danny, you're right on the ball. The reason why
it's not a purchase, because if you give him back the money, he doesn't have to sell in the field.
It's not a purchase. It will be a purchase. I'm sorry. It will be a purchase. But what did he get in addition to his loan? Meaning, in addition to his loan, what he ended up getting is a benefit. Meaning, the benefit is he's got a reduced price on the property. So he lent money, and then what's going to end up happening is he's going to get his loan satisfied and the extra benefit of the reduced price of the property. However, bishaveim mutter. If, however, the price of the if the loan was commensurate to the price of the property, so under those circumstances, it would be permissible. Now, man tana b'damim halalu aser. So Amar Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yeshua d'lo k'Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Again, we're going to make the point one more time. Now, is there necessarily going to be interest charged over here? Or interest, I should say, gained over here? Maybe. Maybe not. Meaning, remember, the lender said to the borrower, if you sell the property, so then you're going to sell it to me at the reduced rate. That doesn't mean that this is going to happen. It just simply means it's a possibility. So since it's only a possibility, once again, we're back at the point of this is a contingent case of interest. Maybe or maybe not. And again, if you subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda would be acceptable with it. So once again, the author of this price is not Rav Yehuda. So let's say now we start off with the deal starting as a sale. And I sell you the house or I sell you a field. And the seller says to the buyer, look, when I have money, I'd like you to return it to me. So under those circumstances, it would be aser. L'chishu l'cha ma'os hechzerim l'cha. And when the buyer says to the seller, well, you know, when you get money back, I'm going to return it to you. So under those circumstances, it would be mutter. Okay, now, aser mutter over here is talking about the possible interest issue. Meaning, let's consider. It starts off as a sale, which means everything is fine. But there's also a very clear stipulation where the seller says to the buyer, but look, if I get my money, meaning right now I'm selling the property and for whatever reason I need to sell it. I need money. But in the event that I come into money, I'm going to give myself the right to buy it back and you're going to agree to these terms. I mean, if you agree to these terms. But you're going to agree to these terms. So essentially what is happening now is that the sale really can convert back to a loan. Meaning because such a stipulation was made, so really the money went into the direction of the seller, but the money can go to back direction to the direction of the buyer because of the stipulation. Now, if it turns out to be a loan, what becomes the problem once again? Once again, the problem becomes is that during this interim period where we don't know what's going to happen, but it's possible that the money's just simply going to be returned back to the seller. Under those circumstances, so now effectively, it was a loan. And if somebody ate the produce on that property, so and that somebody happens to be the lender, so then he's getting a benefit, an extra bonus for somebody holding onto his money. And therefore, it's going to be aser. So once, one more time, the Gemara says, Mantan Amar Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rav Yehuda d'lo k'Rav Yehuda, di Rav Yehuda Amar Tzadecha b'Rei b'Smoter. Okay, so Gemara, just to make sure they reinforce us with this idea that we don't know how this transaction is going to result and it's going to end. It may end in interest and it may not end in interest. And once again, it's contingent interest. And once again, Rabbi Yehuda is okay with it. So obviously, the author of the Braisa is not Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Maishna Reisha, Maishna Seifa. Now, we did, however, make a fine distinction, and that is whether or not the seller said it to the buyer, or the buyer said it to the seller. And the Gemara says, now, I don't understand. What's the difference? Amar Rava Seifa Darmalei Midaite. So Rava says, well, in the second case of the Braisa, where the buyer seller said it to the seller, so the buyer said it to the seller, but Midate. Meaning, but he made it very clear that only if I want. Meaning, look at Rashi. Darmalei Midato. Rashi writes, Imer Tzachzareim, Velo shetitbeini bedin. If I want to, I will return it. But I am not committing myself to returning the property. Hilkach mutter. Dinami chazav kibal maasad achshav shelo haisa. I'm sorry, shelo haisa v'chozo machrelo. You see, in the latter case, the buyer is saying to the seller, "I'll see. I'll see if I want to return it. But I'm not committing myself to it, and I'm not saying that I'm going to have to return it to you." I'm just simply saying I'll take it under consideration. Rashi explains under those circumstances, it will then not become a commitment retroactive to the time of the original sale. It will just simply be a new decision being made by the buyer that he's ready to return the property over to the seller. But you see in the Resha, where the seller says to the buyer, I'm not selling it to you unless you're going to return it to me if I have the money. So now, obviously, the seller who is in the driver's seat of this transaction, so the buyer, if he agrees to it, is committed to agree to this. However, when the buyer says to the seller, I am thinking about returning to you if you have money, he didn't mean it as a commitment. He just simply meant it as a consideration. And that means then that the sale is a finalized sale up until where the buyer, if he decides to, return the property to the seller. Ha'u gav dezamele ar lechavrei shelo ba'achrayus. Okay. Man was selling a property to his friend, and he was selling it to him with no achrayus. Okay? No title insurance, right? Not if the land is taken away from you, you're not gonna get reimbursed for me. I do have creditors. In other words, buyer beware. You are buying the property now at risk. My creditors may come and take it away from you. Okay, and I imagine, although the Gemara doesn't verbalize this, but I imagine then that the buyer would get some sort of break or some sort of discount on the purchase of an unsecured property, but in any event. So the seller sells to the buyer a property but below achrayus, so with no title insurance. So chazid da'aka atziv. And he sees that the buyer is very sad. So, a little bit of assuaging. Amar lei, amai asifta. So the seller says to the buyer, why so sad? I don't understand. Itarfula, look, my creditors come and take it from you. Minach, magbinalach, shufra, shivache, upere. Yeah, you have nothing to worry about. You know what I'll give you? I'll give you the best of my land. I'll give you any investment that you put into the property. The payers that were taken from you, I'll reimburse you for that as well. We're good to go. I'll make good on everything. Now everything he said was just words. None of that was actually contracted onto the document, and it was just basically an assuaging. And as Phil already knows, and today's the daf that discusses this. I mean, there are a number of daffin that discuss it, but today's one of them, and that is in that this really turns into what we would call in halacha an esmachta. Now, the idea behind esmachta is as follows: I say something, but based on the context. And based on all the details, it's clear that I didn't mean it. And generally speaking, we say throughout Shas Asmachta Lokanya that when you say something that was clearly not meant to be taken literally or not meant to be taken seriously, so then you are not bound to that commitment. Should you have not made the commitment altogether, perhaps. Okay, but right now we're not dealing with the ethics of it, we're just dealing with the ramifications of such a statement. If you didn't write it down into the contract and you just simply said it to assuage the individual, that falls under the category of asmachta, and therefore it is not kona. And that is what we're learning together right now. So, Amar Ameira, Petume Mili Ba'amahu. So, Ameira says in such a situation, these words are just there to fatten him up. Right, the word petume literally means to fatten. Look at the top Rashi on Samach Vavam and Aleph. Rashi writes, "Ein elu ela divrei tanchumim ba'ama lefatem es libo." Comforting words. I'm really sorry, Mr. Buyer. You know what? I know. I'm not saying it exactly like the Gemara is saying it, but I'm giving the right tone. I'll try to reimburse you. I'll try to make good on it. Really sorry. Amalei Rav Ashi la Ameim or Taima Mai Kevin Dolokech by Las Nuye. Vahacha mocher kamasne amar petume mila ba'amahu. So Rav Ashi says to Ameimar, I think I understand. I think this is really a function of who's making the statement. In this case, who's making the statement? The seller's making the statement. Who should be making the statement? The buyer should be making the statement. And when I say making the statement, I don't really mean making the statement. I mean that if a buyer is buying property, okay. If the buyer is buying property and the buyer is now wants to know that he is going to get reimbursed in the event that the property is taken away by one of the seller's creditors, so he should have stipulated and put that into the contract. He's the one who is giving his money to buy the property. He should be the one now making the stipulation. The seller's standpoint, look, as far as he's concerned, he's just trying to make a sale. So he is not the one who is really responsible to make this statement of assurances and guarantee. I mean, we have the expression, I used it earlier, buyer beware. It's the buyer's responsibility to make such a statement. So a Maimar is now thinking and considering that the reason why this falls under the category of Asmakta, it's because it's the seller saying, oh, you have nothing to worry about. Because when the seller says you have nothing to worry about, so that's not, that doesn't clear the air. It's the buyer who's the one who needs to worry. Okay, so Allah, so the Gemara says, that's fine, meaning, okay, Ravashi's saying to Amemar, I think I have my head wrapped around this whole idea, but let's go back to a point that we learned just a little bit earlier this morning. So, remember just a little bit earlier this morning, we learned about the case where we had an exchange between the buyer and seller regarding the stipulation of buying back the property. And the seller says to the buyer, if I get the money, I'm committing you to sell me back the property. So the buyer says, commitment. If the buyer says, well, if you get the money, I'll take it under consideration. So then under those circumstances, the buyer said, well, he'll take it under consideration. But that's not a commitment. And now what Ravashi is wondering is the following. So, so the Gemara says, in terms of a buyback clause, so who needs to be making a buyback clause? The seller or the buyer? The seller needs to be making that. In other words, he's the one who wants it back. So in terms of the burden of that responsibility, that's on the seller, that's not on the buyer, in terms of putting a buyback clause into the contract. So the Gemara says, so here's a... So everything's fine, but here's my only issue. Mocha lo asne, v'lo keach kamasne. The amrina and maishna reishna and maishna seifa. And when we learn the braisa, we ask the question, what's the difference between the reishna and the seifa? V'amarav and rava taught us, seifa d'amarle midaite. That in the seifa, he said midaite, which means I'll take it under consideration, which seems to imply taima de amrle midaite. It's only because the buyer says I'll take it under consideration. How lo amrle midaite? Lo amrina patur mimila mamahu. But had he not said it, so then it sounds like it would be a commitment. So amrle nasa kaman de amrle midaite itmar. So the Gemara says no. Based on what Amemar just taught us, the Gemara says, even if the buyer didn't say, I'll take it under consideration, if there was no buyback clause put back into the contract, from the seller's perspective, we're going to assume every single time that the buyer, it's as if he's saying, I'll take it under consideration. Because once the burden of responsibility for a buyback clause is on the seller, it's only the seller and with a firm commitment written into the contract, only then can the seller demand a buyback. Anything short of that is even if the buyer doesn't say, I'll take it under consideration, even if the buyer says, we'll go one step further, even if the buyer says, you know what, if you get the money, I'll sell it back to you. Even if he says that without using the words, I'll take it under consideration, it's still an asmachta and it's still only under consideration, because that wasn't the buyer's responsibility. A man who was dying is now writing a get to his wife for fear that if he leaves her widow, so then she'll be subject to yibum. He knows his brother. He knows it's not a great shidduch. So so what he does is he divorces her in order to protect his wife so that she does not become a widow, but rather a divorcee. So ungivisnach, but however, obviously, I mean, the whole situation was extraordinarily sad, but it was extra sad considering the fact now that he had to divorce his wife. So he let out a sigh. Amrale, so she says to him, "Amayka misnachta, ikayamta didcha ana." So she says to him, "You know, if you survive, meaning if you don't die, so it's not like I'm going anywhere, and I'll be right here, and." What it sounds like she's saying is, and you know what? We'll basically void the get. Okay, now, Amar Razvid Patumi Mila Ba'amahu. Now, Razvid says this too falls under the category of Asmachta, meaning her words are not to be taken literally or seriously. She was just simply saying that to assuage him. but it's not to be taken with any kind of halachic intent. Now the Gemara says, "Amale Ravachim Midifti LeRavina VeIlapetu Mimile Mai BeDidak Kaimer LeMishtei Tanai BeGita." So the Gemara says, "I don't even understand why we're even getting involved in the discussion of Asmachta. It doesn't make any sense in terms of a get. So the husband is really in the driver's seat. In other words, she's the recipient of the get." She's in no position to make stipulations regarding a get. So we're looking at her words and we're critically analyzing. Did she mean them literally? Did she just mean them as means of assuaging?
It's not up to her.
It's not up to her. So the discussion, the Gemara says, quite frankly, is just, it seems like a bizarre discussion. Like, what are we even talking about? So, just punctuation. B'didei kaima l'mishtei tanai. A husband can put a condition in a get if he wants to. But she's in no position to put a condition in the get. She's the recipient of the get. So the Gemara says, well, fine. I'll tell you why the discussion is still relevant, still pertinent. Because even though she's the one who said, and even though she was making a condition, and even though she's in no position by receiving a get to make a condition, but it could be as a hava mina that when the husband hears this, the husband is signing off on that condition. And it could be that when she says it, the husband says, oh, you know what? Yes, agreement. Now, by the way, parenthetically, if you wrote into the get that the get will be conditional upon his death, you know, obviously retroactive to the time of the giving of the get, so in other words, then you could do that. But obviously, this get was given unconditionally, and now the discussion is that if we verbalize a condition, and specifically if she verbalizes a condition, so under those circumstances, it's not going to be followed, it's not going to be heeded, and the Gemara for a moment wondered, what are we even talking about? And the Hava Mina is that he was signing off on her. I don't literally mean signing off. I mean, he was validating the condition that she articulated, and as a Hava Mina, I might have thought that we are then to take this condition seriously, and it has halachic significance, and that's the Chiddush of the statement. It's when it comes to things like monetary transactions, so yeah, so then it's an implicit condition, but with a get, no. With a get, it has to be stipulated. Hilvau al sadehu. Amar avuna b'shas manos kana. Okay, we're up to the second part of the Mishnah. And in the second part of the Mishnah, we talk basically about a simple scenario in which there was a loan. There was a security against the loan. The security represented a property. And the lender says to the borrower, I'm putting terms on the loan. The Mishnah's example is 3 years. So under those circumstances, my voice is back, hopefully. The loan would be at the end of the 3 years, he will get at the point of default of the loan, so he's gonna get the field. And the Mishnah told us that Baitas Ben Zunin did so Api Chachamim. Okay. The Gemara starts the following discussion. Amar Avuna b'shas matmaos kana hakol. La'achar matmaos lo kana ela keneged ma'usav. Okay, now here is the discussion which is implicit in the Mishnah but will become now very clear from the Gemara. And that is the following. I asked this question when we learned the Mishnah, but now let's re-ask the question and let's introduce the answer. What is the Mishnah teaching us? Meaning, essentially what happened in the Mishnah is that it's a simple foreclosure. I lend somebody money. He uses property as a pledge, as a security against the loan. He defaulted, and I gave him terms, and he defaulted, and I just simply assumed ownership of the property. The Mishnah is providing for us is what is simply a simple foreclosure. And it will become very clear from our Gemara's discussion that yes, it is a simple foreclosure. However, what makes it the case of the Mishnah interesting is that the property value is significantly greater than the loan amount. Now, if the property value is significantly greater than the loan amount, so then it certainly would look like ribbis. And what the Mishnah is telling us is that no, it's not ribbis, and yes, it's okay. And that's why Baitas Ben Zunin, back in the Mishnah, he did so al pi chachamim. What does that mean? He foreclosed, you know, based on the advice of the Chachamim? No. What it means is that despite the fact that the value of the property was significantly greater than the loan amount, nevertheless, Baitis Ben Zunan asked the Chachamim, can I do that? Can I engage in such a structured deal? And he says, sure, no problem at all. Okay, now, there's the obvious question, which is, why doesn't this serve as a form of ribis? Essentially, somebody's holding on to my money, and I'm going to get now significantly more back. So why isn't this considered interest? Now, I would say the simplest way to approach this is, well, it's contingent. Meaning, you may not, in other words, the borrower may pay back the loan, and if the borrower pays back the loan, so then then there will be no foreclosing on the property, and there will be no extra gained asset going into the direction of the lender. So I could say that, and to a certain degree that's true, but I think three times this morning we've already said that our Mishnah is not following the opinion of Rav Yehuda. So it's a little bit difficult to say that maybe it's okay over here because it's contingent interest, and contingent interest is okay, that she does Rav Yehuda, and we've seen already time and again, our Mishnah, and the number of Brises also this morning, does not subscribe to the viewpoint of Rav Yehuda. So I know that's not going to be a good answer. So what is discussed by the Rishonim is the following. The Rishonim make the following suggestion, that we're going to make a very fundamental distinction between accrued interest versus a penalty that comes at the end of a loan. Now, it's a delicate distinction, I admit, but you have to say something. Meaning, the Mishnah is totally validating such a deal, such a structured deal, so you have to say something. So, interest is only when you accrue interest over the course of the loan, or you accrue gain, like the case of the fruit, over the course of the loan. If, however, the loan at the end is due, and he's not paying me, and I want to place a penalty at the end of the loan because he didn't pay me, so that's how many Rishonim, and this is, it finds itself in the Shulchan Aruch, understand that's how our Mishnah works. Where I'm saying to him, if you want to pay me back the loan, that's great, but if not, there's going to be a penalty. And what's the penalty? The penalty is going to be, is that we're going to forfeit the property, even though the property is greater than that of the loan. And that, says the Rishonim, is how you understand our Mishnah. With all that stated now, let's start with the Gemara. We're in Samach Vav Amin Aleph. We're at the two dots of Al Sadeh. Amar Rav Huna B'Shas Mat Maus Kana HaKol La'achar Mat Maus Lo Kana Ela Keneged Mausav. And so now we understand Rav Huna. Rav Huna says like this, look, if at the origination of the loan we make such a pledge where the borrower gives his house up and set, not, he doesn't give it up, but he uses it as a security, and with the understanding that if he defaults at the loan at the end, so then he's going to lose the entire house, including the extra value. So then, fine. So meaning, it's the deal stands. However, if after the money was given, the lender starts getting nervous about, am I going to get back my money? And then after that, he turns to the borrower and says to the borrower, you have anything you want to pledge to me? And the borrower pledges his house. So then the only thing the lender can recoup is only the value of the loan, but nothing greater than that. Rav Nachman Amar Afilu La'achar Mat Maos Kanakol. Now Rav Nachman says no. Even after the origination of the loan, you can structure such a deal where the borrower is going to put up a house, even though the house is greater than the value of the loan. And Rav Nachman says now, and he'll take everything. Okay, now, although this sounds a little bit strange because we've just been talking about for the last, I'd say, 20 minutes, this idea of a smachta. You can easily understand that in such a scenario, imagine, after the origination of the loan, where now the money's in the borrower's hands, and the borrower says to the lender, oh, you know what? You want assurances that you're going to get paid back? I'll tell you what. I got this wonderful house. It's worth much more than the value of the loan. And if I default, you get to keep it. I can easily make the argument that that certainly sounds like an asmachta. Meaning, he didn't really expect that he was going to give up his house, which exceeds the value of the loan, after the loan has already been originated, I understand that at the time of the origination of the loan, so then the lender's in the driver's seat. And the lender says to the borrower, you want my money? That's fine, but I'm worried, and I need security, and there's going to be a penalty at the end. Fine, but after the loan originated, now we're going to talk about putting up a security greater than the loan? Sounds a little bit like a smakta. Hold that thought for just a moment. That thought will come back. Avir Rav Nachman of Digabi Resh Galusa Kishmaite. Rav Nachman did exactly as he proposed in the Beis Medrash, where there was a loan. After the money was handed over to the borrower, then a contract was written up subsequently that the house, that a property of the borrower was going to be used as security, and that property exceeded the value of the house, and Rav Nachman signed off on such a deal, on such a contract. So Rav Yehuda caught wind of this. Rav Yehuda took the document and tore it up. Rav Yehuda felt that there was no validity whatsoever to such a document. So Amalei Reish Galusa, Rav Yehuda Karvelish Tarech, so Reish Lakish, who, as we all know, time and again, Reish Lakish and Rav Nachman were close. They were very close to one another. So the Reish Galusa. Oh. If I said Reish Lakish, then I misspoke. So the Reish Galusa. So Rav Yehuda Karvelish Tarech. So Reish Galusa was kind of almost like amazed. Like, did you see what Rav Yehuda just did? You wrote up a document. He tore it up. I mean, that's crazy. So Amarlei Dardeka Kare. So Rav Nachman, in our first version, Rav Nachman had humility. Which, good. If you've been with us in the daf long enough, you'll know that's not normally his MO. But Rav Nachman had humility, and he said, look. Who tore up my document that I drafted? It wasn't a child. Gavaraba Kare. It was a great man. It was Rav Yehuda. Chazabei Tamei V'Kare. It must be that he knew what he was doing. He's right. I'm wrong. And so in our first version, Rav Nachman has humility in saying, Rav Yehuda must have his reasons. Now, Ikadami, now we have a second version. When I was preparing the Gemara yesterday, the first version struck me as, that's not Rav Nachman. That's not the Rav Nachman I know. And then when we came on to the second version, I'm like, oh, like, I don't know how to say this, but I knew this was coming. Now, obviously, I'm saying this in hindsight now, but okay. So Amar Le Dardeke Kare Dekule Amar Le Gabi Di Bedine Dardeke Ninu. Okay, Rav Nachman says, who tore up my document? It was a child, because regarding me in financial matters and judicial law, everyone relative to me is a child, and so therefore he said to the Reish Galusa, pay no mind to the fact that Rav Yehuda tore up my document. Okay. That's who I know. Okay, anyway, Hadar Amar Rav Nachman Afilu B'Shas Mar Malos Lo Kana V'Lo Klum. Okay, and then Rav Nachman, after further review, now again, I guess it depends on which version you went with, the first version, the second version. But upon further review, Rav Nachman does a 180. And now take the thought that I planted in your head a couple of minutes earlier, and now take it out. And all this really, meaning all this really is an asmachta, meaning that under these circumstances, I'm pledging a property greater than the value of the loan, even at the point of origination. I mean, come on. So Eitzvei Revel Rav Nachman Im Iatanosin Limi Kanva Shalshanim Harei Shali Harei Shalo. So fine. So Rav Nachman does a 180 and he calls it an asmachta, but what about our Mishnah? And what about Baitas Ben Zunin? So Amar Lei Ani Omer Asmachta Kanya Uminyuma Amar Asmachta Lo Kanya. Look, Rav Nachman says, I'm of the firm belief that Asmachta is Kona. And Minyumi is of the opinion that Asmachta is not Kana. So, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, I have no problem with the Mishnah. Because I subscribe to Asmachta being Kona. But other Amoraim disagree. So let the Amoraim who hold Asmachta Lokanya, let them deal with the Mishnah. Ula Minyume Kasha, Masnisen, Ibai Sema Masnisen Rav Yos, Idam Asmachta Kanya. So one answer we can propose is the following, that our Mishnah subscribes to the opinion of Rav Yosi. Meaning, there is a Tana who's of the opinion that Asmachta is Kona. That even when you make a statement which seems outlandish, it seems ridiculous, but Rav Yossi says it's an asmachta, and he feels that it's kona. Now, the example is given at the end of Baba Basra. Rashi quotes it very succinctly over here in the end of our daf. But anyway, for our purposes right now, that we just need to know that there's a Tana out there, and the Mishnah follows that Tana. Ima iba is ima da amrlei kani me'achshav. Or the Gemara says, maybe the Mishnah is meant in the following manner, that the lender says to the borrower, I'll lend you the money, but you're going to put up the property security, and if you default, the property is going to go back to me, and the property is going to go to me, retroactive to the origination of the loan. And therefore, there is no problem of ribis whatsoever. Why? Because this is what's called a sale. It's no longer a loan. Now again, if he defaults on the loan, it's a sale. But in other words, if we go back to the time of the origination of the loan, so therefore now the Mishnah is understood as a sale, not as a loan. And it's as a result of that where the Mishnah says it's fine. But if it's not retroactive to the time of the origination, and it is only at a later point in time, so then that will represent the problem of ribis or asmachta. And by the way, mind you, if we're understanding the Mishnah this way, that it goes back to retroactive to the time of the origination of the loan, what about the fruit during the interim? So Rashi over here writes, okay, so the fruit going to be a problem. Meaning like we discussed in the beginning of today's shiur, the fruit is going to be held in escrow, the fruit will be a problem. But if you understand the Mishnah this way, it's a sale, it's not a loan.